Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and we're at the interview part of the show. Now we have an author that's been published by Rattling Yard, Rattling Good Yarns, and Ian sent us to him. To us, so we will be talking to him. So that's Greg Shapiro. The book is called How to Whistle, Expanded Edition. How are you doing, Greg?
I'm doing fine, thank you. And you?
I'm always good.
Good.
Oh, not really. okay, let's see. Now, this is a republishing of a book you did before, and it's got new stories to it. So, why did you decide to come out with a new version of this book?
Well, the first book, the first edition of the book came out in 2016. It was my second short story collection. The first one came out in 2014 as a book of stories called Lincoln Avenue, all of which are set in Chicago, from Squares and Rebels Press, based in Minneapolis. And then when I put together a second collection, Squares and Rebels took a pass on it. And then I went to another press where I had an unfortunate experience with the publisher. So I decided that I really loved these stories and I wanted them to reach the audience they deserved. So that's when I approached Rattling Good Yarns Press to see if they'd be interested in publishing the book, but with two new stories added to it, so an expanded edition.
Why did you write the book? Like, what was going through your mind when you first sat down to write it, the very first edition? Like, what kind of thoughts were you having?
Well, with both collections of short stories, most of these were stories that already had been published in a multitude of journals, even going as far back as the 90s with Christopher Street Magazine. I don't know if you remember Christopher Street Magazine from New York, but some of the stories have been published there and others have been published in other literary journals. Some have been published in anthologies. So for me, it was really, it wasn't like sitting down and writing a novel where you have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And they're often, I believe, I haven't written a novel, but I believe that they're all written with the sole purpose of it being published, you know, all published at once. These were stories that had lived previously in other places, and I thought that they all were a good fit together in a book of short stories.
Mm. Yeah, I don't remember that magazine. I'm only about 17, so.
Wow, a youngster. Okay, well, it's worth researching because it's a pretty important magazine from the past.
Oh, well, I'm so young. I'm carefree. Where did you pick the stories from? Like you said, the magazine, but what, I guess what I'm trying to say is, what about a certain short story was it that you would go, wow, I want this?
Well, these stories, they're of a specific time. Most of them, well, there's one story that goes pretty far back, but most of them are basically stories about being a gay man in the 80s, 90s, and aughts. So that's what the through line is. That's what connects them all. And as I mentioned, some take place in Chicago, some take place in Boston, some places take place in Washington, D.C. So there's also that sort of connective tissue, if you will.
Yeah. Well, okay. So so about being a gay man. So in what part of being a gay man did you look for? Like what aspects?
Oh, they're all kind of all over the place. There's a couple of semi coming out stories, but most of them, the characters are already out. They're living their lives. They have jobs, they have friends, they have lovers. So there's no necessarily, you know, these are adult gay men living their lives in major metropolitan areas.
So now the title, I noticed the title is pretty interesting. So it's called How to Whistle. what was the meaning behind that title?
It's actually a line from the story. There's a story in the book called Sixth and E, which is actually an intersection of two streets in Washington, D.C. And it's a line from one of the stories. In the story, the main character is a guy who's in a relationship and happy in the relationship, but over the course of a couple of months, he is suddenly tempted by another man who lives on his block, who every time he walks past the guy's house, the guy whistles at him. And so it's sort of what develops from something as simple as just being whistled at, and then what follows after that.
So it's really about the way people communicate with each other, or gay people, gay men in specific. So when you, do you think that's changed over the years? Do you think that there's a difference in the way gay men, I don't know, communicate or get each other's attention?
Well, I certainly think that the internet has changed a lot of the way gay men interact and the way they meet. You know, there's bars, for example, which used to be a place where gay men would congregate and meet. And we're talking, you know, just a year ago, you know, just a little more than a year ago, pre-pandemic. There still is that way of meeting people, but now with social media and various apps, it has definitely changed the way gay men interact. But still, it's not still, I think, not an uncommon occurrence for two men to pass on the street, for there to be eye contact, and then who knows what follows. But, of course, that would mean that both men would be looking up from their phones. So maybe things have changed enough that that doesn't even happen anymore.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Men are horny. So when someone gets your book, finish reading it and stuff, what is it that you hope they get out of that?
More than anything, what I really hope is that they laugh a lot, because the book is, while there are some serious stories, for the most part, many of the stories are humorous or intended to be humorous. I guess that's all in the eye of the reader. But I hope that first and foremost that they laugh, that they are amused and entertained, that if they're not gay, that they might have learned something, just a little something, one gay man's perspective on gay life. I hope that comes through. I think that's what I really hope, is that they learn something new about people that they didn't know before.
Well, so how do you think it is for gay men now in the U.S., as compared to the 70s and 80s and even the 90s?
Well, thankfully, things have changed and are changing because of the new, because of President Joe Biden, which just, by the way, sounds so great to say, President Joe Biden. Just
really. What are you trying to say?
as opposed to the walking turd that was the previous president. 4 years of sheer hell. Already things are changing because there's a different level of respect coming from the White House, coming from those, many of those in command. That, you know, there's still going to be people like Miss Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell, the turtle, and other people who have no interest in seeing the lives of gay people improve. But but things have changed considerably now that there's a Democrat in control, now that there's some normal people in office. So yes. But in terms of now versus back then, I think that the possibly the most frightening thing out of all this is that if you're a gay man of a certain age, the way the pandemic, the way the COVID-19 pandemic has been handled is terrifyingly familiar to the way the HIV/AIDS epidemic was handled in the early 1980s, in that there was a Republican in office, and there was a virus that was impacting, you know, HIV/AIDS impacted gay men very mostly in the early days. So it was a minority that was not favored by the Republicans in office, in the same way that in the early days of the COVID pandemic, Black and brown people were impacted. So there was, again, no urgency for the Republicans to take any kind of serious action. I hope that made sense.
Yeah, no, I understand. You know, it's in general, a conservative government looks out. So they're better at war and military. And, they don't focus necessarily on the people.
Right.
That's pretty common. What was your favorite story in the short story in the book?
Oh, that's like asking a parent what their favorite child is. I don't think I could do that.
I could.
what was that? I'm sorry.
I said I could. I've got dogs, and I pick my favorite.
Well, I have a dog, so which is probably best that there's only one dog, because I would worry about favoring one over the other. But no, I think the stories are different enough that that's what I like about them, that there's similarities, but there's also differences. So unfortunately, I don't think I could pick a favorite.
Mm. How did writing the book change you, or did it?
I don't think it changed me. So this is my second book of short stories, but I also have, I always lose count, 5 books of poetry. So each book does sort of take its own, gets its own attention and focus. I think that the only book that might have changed me was when my first book came out in 2008, and it only changed me because it was like, oh, I have a book out. And each book is as exciting as that. Oh, I've got a new book. But that first book, I think, changed me just in that I finally had a book out after many years of publishing in literary journals, having my work published in anthologies, and even in textbooks. But having them all together, having work together under one cover, definitely is a powerful experience.
You know, we talk to a lot of writers in all sorts of areas of writing, all sorts of fields. So poetry is totally alien to me. How did you know that you wanted to write poetry, and how did you get that confidence that what you were writing was going to be good?
So I actually started out about 200 years ago as a theater major.
Wow, you're a lot older than me.
And that was an interesting and eye-opening experience. I had been writing at that time anyway. I was writing poetry and other things, but I really thought that I wanted to be an actor. And it's a very long story, but I had a really good experience as a theater major that made me realize that's not what I wanted to do. And so while I was a theater major, I was also taking a poetry class, and that was a turning point. That was a good experience. It made me realize that that's something I had more interest in. And then I had started college, and then I went for a year and a half, and I took a year and a half off to figure out what I really wanted to do, since I wasn't going to be doing theater anymore. And then I decided I wanted to write, and so I transferred to a college in Boston, and decided to become a creative writing major. And while I was doing that, I had a teacher by the name of Bill Knott, K-N-O-T-T, who was a really amazing poet. And while I was an undergrad, one of the assignments that he gave our class, our poetry workshop, was that he was really pleased with the level of work in the class, and he's encouraged us as part of our grade to send our work out to literary journals, literary magazines. And he taught us how to do that. This is back in the 80s. This is pre-internet, pre-computer, and there was a process that you had to go through to submit your work. He urged us to send clean copy, meaning that it was, there were no mistakes, there were no misspellings, punctuation was correct. He taught us how to write a cover letter when submitting work, and he taught us how back in the old days, there was something called a SAISI, which was a self-addressed stamped envelope, which you would include with your submission, so that, again, pre-internet, pre-computer, so that the publication could let you know if they liked your work and if they were going to publish it, or if they didn't like it and then they could return it to you. So way back then, I sent some work to a magazine and it was accepted for publication. So it's almost like a drug. Like once you get a taste of that experience, you want to have it more of it. So I just started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
During the research, finding out what magazines were reading work for submission, and that's really how it started.
A poet write about, like, how does, okay, so I'm trying to understand this, because I've had several books published, but mine have all been nonfiction and more true crime or more reality-based sort of things, you know, events that have happened. Okay. So I understand my process, and I've talked to a lot of crime fiction and a lot of romance and all this stuff, but what's the process for a poet?
Well, I think everybody's different. Every poet has a different process. I have sort of a two-prong thing. One is the wait for inspiration process, which I'm very fortunate that I've been able to find a lot of inspiration over the years. So there's that, especially last year during the early days of the pandemic. I ended up writing more last year than I wrote in the two previous years. So that was, and while it's not, you know, the greatest situation during the pandemic, it did produce a lot of work. The other strange source for me personally has been, because I've been doing this for a long time, I'm often solicited for anthologies or themes of magazine, themed issues of magazines. So as has been the case for me in the past, I've been solicited for an anthology. For example, I'm trying to think of like what's a, there's an anthology that came out in the, I think in the 90s, that was writing about condoms. So they were looking for fiction and poetry about condoms. And so I'd gotten solicited for that. And I did not, as it turns out, have anything, but I did write something, which I sent to them and was then accepted into the anthology. And then that poem actually ended up becoming the title poem for my first book of poetry. And the poem was called Protection, and that's also the title of my first book.
Yeah. You know, so why do you think you had so much more work during the part of the pandemic? A lot of writers have shut down. A lot of writers have had struggle. So is it more that maybe the emotion involved in something like a pandemic or whatever else is going on, if it's a real negative or stressful or that darker time, does that evoke more of your emotion then?
I would say that's definitely an aspect of it. It's a response to a situation, which could also end up being a short story. I mean, I since I write both, I think what it was just this necessity to express myself in regards to what that situation was presenting.
Well, you know, and as a poet, usually I look at poetry as it's a lot deeper. When you read a poem, there's several meanings to each phrase, to a lot of the words, and you have to read it several times to try and get deep enough to understand it. Is that sort of the case when you're writing? Are you aware that that's what's going on when you write a poem?
My approach has always been that it's hard enough to get a person to read a poem so that I would not want to make them walk away from it. I would not want a reader to have any confusion at any point in anything I write, so that I make sure that the language, that the subject matter is accessible enough so that anyone and everyone can understand it. And that, because there is that thing, people say, oh, I don't like poetry because I don't understand it. And my feeling is that's kind of just an excuse. So that one of the things I always tell people is, because poetry comes from an oral tradition, I think one of the ways that makes it easy for people to understand a poem is just read it out loud. If you're, and I wouldn't say do this while you're at work or on public transportation or on an airplane, maybe. I would say if you're reading a book of poetry at home, read the poem out loud, and you will definitely get more out of it if you do that. And that, I think, will also help with the comprehension of the poem.
So is there a particular outcome? Like when I'm writing a book, there's a beginning, middle, and ending. There's a story I'm telling, and I'm presenting the evidence. And even like when David, he writes his books, there's a story involved, even though it's fiction. Is there something like that as an outcome that you hope for in a poem or a short story even?
Absolutely, yes. It's about capturing, like I said, I don't have a novel. I don't think I ever will write a novel. Short stories really are my preferred means of expression via prose. So my hope is that, and even sometimes I'll even know how a short story is going to end before I've even gotten to that point. Of course, as is often the case, you think you know how it's going to end, and then it writes itself, and it's the ending you thought was going to happen doesn't happen. Even sometimes in something as short as a poem, you might think you know where you're, where it's going, and then it takes on a life of its own. But I do feel like even if it's a compact version of storytelling, it's not a novel, but it's a short story. I do think that the idea is to take the reader on some kind of a journey, whatever that journey is.
It's interesting. So you kind of mentioned when I asked about picking out a favorite story, you said, well, you can't. You treat them like they're like your children. I interview a lot of crime fiction people, and they have the same sort of relationship with the characters they write about in their books, or even some of the primary, if it's a detective and they're in a series of books. And they kind of, a lot of them feel like those characters, those people are their children, these people in their stories. So how do you compare that? Like, is it a character in the story, in the short story, or is it the story itself or poem?
Well, I think, yes, I think for me, it's the events, it's what's happening, more so, then of course, you know, the characters eventually they evolve, or they reveal themselves to me. But I think for me, often it's an event that is the driving force. There's a story in the book called Bully in a Bar, which is about the narrator of the story is going through all sorts of changes, emotional situations, and in the course of a night, he runs into a school bully who made his life miserable as a child. He runs into this guy in a gay bar. So lo and behold, the person who called him all sorts of names and made all sorts of accusations about him when they were younger, turns out to be gay himself. And it's about that sort of confrontation. That was the inspiration for the story, the idea that what if you run into a bully in a bar, in a place that you wouldn't expect to find them.
Huh. It's interesting. Where do these stories come from? Like for you, like when you write a story, is it a passing thing? Do you all of a sudden get it in the middle of the night, or is it you pass someone in a store, or you? Where does that kind of the initial story come from?
I think it varies with each one. Sometimes it is a memory that is sparked, something that's said. That's always a good, overhearing a conversation or again, just remembering something that was said once in the past. And it could just be sitting there, in the back of my consciousness, and then suddenly when it comes forward, it becomes something more than just a memory. It becomes inspiration for telling a story or even for writing a poem. Something I've been doing a lot lately, and there's actually some of the stories in How to Whistle are the result of this. I started out first as a poet and then became more of a fiction writer and then pretty much are writing both equally. But one of the things I've been doing lately is going back to a poem. A lot of my poems are in a narrative style. So I have been going back to poems and then looking at them again and expanding them into short stories. So that's also another source for inspiration.
Huh. Now, do you have other writers that inspire you or influence the way you write?
Definitely. In fact, I did an interview the other day with a local journalist here in South Florida. There's a poetry festival coming up in April. April is National Poetry Month. And there's a poetry festival in South Florida that goes by the name of O Miami. It's O, comma, Miami. And I was doing an interview about, I'm doing a group reading with some other South Florida poets. And one of the questions she asked was about inspiration, reading other writers. And something I just don't know why this is the case, but when I'm doing my own reading for just to read, I'm reading more prose than poetry. I do read a lot of poetry, a lot. But I really am more drawn to reading prose. I should also say that my day job, which is I'm an entertainment journalist, so I write for about 15 or 16 regional publications. I cover music and film and books and some television. And so when I'm doing, I no longer experience any of those things. I'm trying to think of how to say this without sounding. So those things that used to really bring me great pleasure when I wasn't writing about them have now become work. And that's not a bad thing. That's actually a really good thing because I still love music, I still love movies, I still love books, but in writing about them, it's changed the way I approach them. So I do a lot of author interviews. So again, it's more often than not, it's novels or nonfiction. I just did an interview with a writer named Lauren Hoff who wrote a memoir about growing up. She was raised, her parents were members of the Children of God cult.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, you know, the Phoenixes, Joaquin Phoenix and River Phoenix, they were raised in that cult. And Rose McGowan, the actress, was raised in that cult. So this woman wrote this memoir about that cult. But also about coming out as a lesbian and then joining the military, which some might think is not just another cult. And then her other work. So that's a good source for interview material, memoirs, novels, etc. So I'm not sure if I answered that question.
You're giving us your inspiration. So now, do you yourself have a website or a place that you like people to go and find you and talk to you about things or send you
ideas? I do not have a website, but I am on the Facebook. And it's just my name, which is Greg, G-R-E-G-G, Shapiro, S-H-A-P-I-R-O. There are a few others of us with the same name, but I'm the one with the shaved head, so it's easier to find me that way.
There you go. Well, we'll have that on our website. We're also going to have the Rattling Good Yarns Press linked up to our website with your book and things like that, so people can find you easily that way. Well, it's certainly been a pleasure. I enjoy talking to you. Same here.
I'm very grateful for you to take the time to do this, and I hope I wasn't boring.
Never. What do you got planned coming up? Are you going to be doing more short story books, or are you just going to what's kind of the future?
Well, I have a new poetry collection that I've put together that I've started sending out to actually two that I have. That I'm sending out to presses, and I've got a few new short stories, which means that ultimately at some point I would like to have enough short stories for another collection. But right now I'm focusing on one or two new books of poetry.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. Well, our guest has been Greg Shapiro, and the book we're talking about is How to Whistle, and it's the expanded edition. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Alan, David. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg.
Take care.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.